नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतिरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। योऽन्तः प्रविश्य मम वाचम् इमां प्रसुप्तां संजीवयत्यखिल शक्तिधर स्वधाम्ना अन्यांश्च हस्तचरणश्रवणत्वगादिन् प्राणान् नमो भगवते पुरुषाय तुभ्यं। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम टू श्रीमद् भागवतम डिस्कशन। We are studying from Canto 5, Chapter 17, Verse 4. The chapter is titled as The Descent of River Ganges. So this canto predominantly is filled of prose. So we'll just stand the verse by word to word.
Tatah aneka sahasra koti vimananika संकुलदेवा यानेन अवतरन्ति इंदुमंडलम् आवार्य ब्रह्मसदने निपतति।
Someone wants to read the verse? No? Okay, we'll do a word to word. Tataha, after purifying the seven planets of the seven great sages, aneka, many, sahasra, thousands, koti, of millions, vimana anika, with contingents of airplanes, sankula, congested, Devayanena, by the space rays of the demigods, Avataranti, descending, Indu Mandalam, the moon planet, Avarya, inundated, Brahma Sadane, to the abode of Lord Brahma, atop Sumeru Parvata, Nipatati, falls down. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: after purifying the seven planets near Dhruva Loka, the pole star, the Ganges waters carried through the space rays of demigods in billions of celestial airplanes. Then it inundates the moon, Chandra Loka, and finally reaches Lord Brahma's abode atop Mount Meru. Purport: we should always remember that the Ganges River comes from the causal ocean, beyond the covering of the universe. After the water of the causal ocean leaks through the hole created by Lord Vamanadeva, it flows down to Dhruva Loka, the pole star, and then to the seven planets beneath Dhruva Loka. Then it is carried to the moon by innumerable celestial airplanes, and then it falls to the top of Mount Meru, which is known as Sumeru Parvata. In this way, the water of the Ganges finally reaches the lower planets and the peaks of the Himalayas. And from there it flows through Haridwar and throughout the plains of India, purifying the entire land. How the Ganges water reaches the various planets from the top of the universe is explained herein. Celestial airplanes carry the water from the planets of the sages to other planets. So-called advanced scientists of the modern age are trying to go to the higher planets, but at the same time, they are experiencing a power shortage on Earth. If they were actually capable scientists, they could personally go by airplane to other planets, but this they are unable to do. Having now given up their moon excursions, they are attempting to go to other planets, but without success.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishna Vamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So, as devotees have been speaking on this very interesting canto, in this very interesting chapter, the descent of river Ganges, as Madhumanjari Mataji was explaining the other day, fifth canto is all about sthanam. And sthanam is where the jivas reside and how they actually use this place to elevate themselves to get out of this material quagmire. And in the last chapter we saw the explanation of Jambudvipa, and this chapter is all about descent of river Ganges. Now, Prabhupada explains about how river Ganges descends into this material universe and how it is actually coming from the causal ocean and how Vamandev facilitates that. And there were obviously prayers from a lot of rishis, especially Bhrigu Rishi and Bhagirathi. She is also called as Bhagirathi. How because of his request it came down, she came down to cleanse the universe. Now, before even I start, I remember that day when I was in Haridwar, and that was the first time I actually went and touched Ganga Maya. It was a very, very marvelous experience. I still remember we had to walk a little bit to the tut where you actually get down into the river Ganges. there was something very divine about this water. And it's amazing because for mundane people, it's just a river. For God's sake, it's just a river, they say. But there's something very sublime in the way we envision, especially all of these five elements, whether it's river or air or any of the material elements. So when I got down into the water, she was very cool. She's usually very cool. She's coming from the Himalayas, and Haridwar is very closer to the Himalayas. So when you go into the water, and there are chains which you hold and get into, because the rabhasa, the force of her flow is very, very heavy. You can get swept away with her force. And especially, she always keeps changing her pace. It's not always flowing very smooth. Sometimes she can become very turbulent. Sometimes she's very calm. So you can't predict how she flows. So there's always chains which you hold and then get into the river. And I was there, and within probably half an hour, you could see the river levels were raising, and it was waist deep, and then later it became chest deep and then neck deep. So she was flowing, you could always see that the flow of water has increased. So a lot of people started coming out of the river. And then when there was sunset, they did Ganga Arati, where a lot of devotees, a lot of people put their diyas on river Ganga, and they worshipped her. This sight has ever got imprinted in my consciousness. Actually, it was so amazing, that sight. And the reverence they have to this river is quite amazing. And her crispy cold waters. So therefore, this river is very unique. It is just not river. It is transcendental waters that is emanating from the causal ocean, especially from the spiritual world, and it touches the feet of Lord Vamandev. And how the Lord facilitates that as Charanamrita, which Upavandesh Prabhu was telling us, that is actually Charanamrita because it's touched the feet of the Lord. And scriptures repeatedly glorify all these sacred rivers. In fact, before we begin our worship, the Panchapatra or the Achaman cup, which we say, we purify the water by invoking all the rivers, you know, Gange, Chayamune, Chaiva, Godavari, Saraswati, Narmade, Sindhu, Kaveri, Jalesmin, Sannidham, Kuru. So we invoke all the rivers before even we worship the Lord. Because the Lord is worshipped by these sacred rivers. So therefore it becomes very significant. So why are these rivers significant, and why do scriptures continuously glorify them? Because they are connected to the Lord. One may think, why does Bhagavatam talk about the river? You know, Bhagavatam is amazing. In the material world, there is National Geographic. They'll talk about animals. They'll talk about nature. They'll talk about beauty. Bhagavatam is not less. They're all talking from Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam talks about animals. Gajendra. Why is the story of an elephant inside Bhagavatam? This is international. This is not National Geographic. This is Universal Geography. So it talks about animals, it talks about humans, it talks about celestial beings, it talks about mountains, it talks about rivers. So the scriptures talk about this, but not to get just amused by them, but to ultimately think, why do these scriptures talk about these entities? Why is Gajendra even important? Why is an elephant even important for us? Right? In traditional material world, they talk about elephants and their children and all of that. They only start from there, you know. But here the elephant is important because it's connected to the Supreme Lord. When Gajendra's prayers are heard, these Gajendra Moksha prayers, because Gajendra attained mukti or liberation, these prayers, we all devotees repeat it. If an elephant can attain it, of course, humans can do it as well. So many times Srimad Bhagavatam glorifies animals, glorifies asuras, and here we also saw how an asura, who is in fact, he's a devotee, Bali Maharaj, how Bali Maharaj becomes instrumental to bring down Ganges into this universe, and how Vamanadeva facilitates it. So that's why it becomes very important, and that is why these chapters are very important for us to meditate how significant anything that you see in relation to the Lord, like the Chatushloki, Rithe Ritham Yat Pratiyeta Na Pratiyeta Chatmani Tat Vidyad Atmano Mayam Yathabhaso Yathatamaha. Anything that you don't see with relation to Krishna is matter, but anything you see in relation to Krishna, that becomes very spiritual. So in that sense, the mundane element called water or river becomes very superior because she's connected to the Supreme Lord. And therefore this vision that we have, especially people coming from the Bharata Varsha, that they see everything connected to God. When the Britishers annexed India, they couldn't understand. These people are worshipping trees. They thought they are aboriginals. They are people who are just very remote people. They are jungle vasis. They don't know. They are just worshipping everything and out of fear. It's not out of fear. It's because of love. It's a superior vision as described in the scriptures. And this has been imbued into our traditions, actually. Now, Prabhupada also takes the opportunity to put as a critique to modern scientists, especially wherever given possibility, Prabhupada does that. He tries to defeat the Mayavadis, he tries to defeat the scientists. And one may, for a mundaner, he may think, why is Prabhupada even doing that? We could talk only about the positive aspects. Why is Prabhupada always bringing up? He talks about the scientists' struggle. They are now going to the moon. They have stopped going to the moon. Now they have gone to the other planets. We see this pursuits. Recently they are trying to get into Mars. Why does Prabhupada always bring this? Because that is also Shastri. Shastras, we should also think what is good and what is not good. We should also think what is not good also. And scientists and science today, they call it science, but it's actually not science. It's more of a dogma. These are dogmatists. They are not scientists, actually. Scientists in Sanskritam is called as Vijnana or Viparita Jnana or Vichalita Jnana. Or that is the pinnacle of Jnana. Or the realization of knowledge is called as science in spiritual sense. But in today's science, it is full of dogmatism. Therefore, Prabhupada doesn't spare them. Why does it do? Because today's science, if we actually predominantly see, they give us two things. They give us hope and they give us fear. These are the only two things which science runs. Because they'll promise us good life. They'll tell if you follow us, if you follow our inventions, then you have a very comfortable living. You can be very comfortable in this material world. And we will promise you eternal youth. You may postpone your death. You may remain ever young by putting those cosmetics on the face. And you will look young. You may not be young, but you will look young for other people. So all of these promises, they will give us. Prabhupada is very critical about this because today's science is subtly programming us. If you really see, all their inventions are sapping us of our critical energy. Humans all have energy. That is the Kriya Shakti, the Jnana Shakti and the Bala, all these Jnana Kriya Bala of the Lord. We are all having an amsha of them. So this has to be invested back into the Lord in terms of bhakti. But today's science and scientists snatch us from our critical energy into these material pursuits or into these useless pursuits. Therefore, it becomes very critical to actually de-alienate real science from the so-called scientists. So that's why Prabhupada makes it a very important point that do not follow such dogmatists. Wake up. So it is a wake-up call for all of us. Generally, in the fifth canto, this canto also is very unique because it's full of prose. This is another canto which was very significant in our Sripad Madhvacharya's life also. Because this canto is full of prose. It's not very difficult, it's not very easy to remember these verses and even chant these verses. When he was about 7 years old, even in the 13th or the 12th century, there were many, many versions of Bhagavatam. So usually they were all copies. You know, Bhagavatam also was rendered through mouth and it was written down. And every person used to write down in his own language. If you go to Bengal, they would have written in Bengali. If you come to South India, they would have written in Tulu Bhasha. If you go to Kashmir, they would have written in Nagari, Nandi Nagari, Brahmi. There are many lipis. Devanagari is another lipi. So everybody you will see from each locality, whichever lipi they have, they will make a note of it. So when you make a note, there are always differences. So the father of Madhvacharya was also a Bhagavatam speaker. So he had a lot of great scholars around him. They were asking him, we have so many copies of Bhagavatam and there are prakshita, there are differences in them. So which one do we think is original? So Madhvacharya said, he recited verses of the whole fifth canto. He was 6 or 7 years old. He could recite the whole fifth canto. And he says, whichever book is talking about these verses, that is original. Now first of all, the scholars were amazed. How could such a small boy recite? Fifth canto is very big test for scholars because the prose is very difficult to recite. And they are not, Padya and Gadya. Gadya is a prose. Padya is you can recite it in verse. You can sing it. But Gadya, this prose is very difficult to remember and sing. But Madhvacharya could do it. And then they were verified, they had only one book which matched to what Madhvacharya recited as a little boy. He was not even Madhvacharya then. His name was Vasudeva. So when little Vasudeva recited it, they thought, okay. And then they asked him, how come you remember all of these? This is very difficult to remember. And your father has never taught you this. So he said, I remember it from my last life. So he said like that. I don't know, I remember it from my last life. So it came naturally to him. He just remembered the whole Bhagavatam. So therefore this Bhagavatam is also very important for us. In that sense, this canto is also very significant for us. Many modern people think when we read the fifth canto, the other glories of fifth canto is it seems to be filled with phantasmagoria, you know, fantasy. It seems like water flowing from somewhere in the universe, a hole, and then the water is flowing everywhere. It doesn't make sense. You're talking like some Hollywood movie or something, you know. So mundaners say, they might say these are all fantasy stories or, you know, general term for Indian scriptures. They say mythology, fantasy and mythology, good for a movie. But little did they understand that 300 years ago, if we spoke about flying, you know, flying every day, going to different countries, they would have thought that is fantasy as well. Is it not? 300 years, just 250, 300 years ago, before the Wright brothers invented. So all of those was fantasy for them. If somebody said, we will go to the moon, that was a fantasy for them. Is it not? So, the so-called scientists can go to moon and get rocks, useless rocks. But they cannot comprehend airplanes flying and getting water. Is it not? So, they are going to moon getting rocks. And here, devatas are going to some place and getting water. It's not different. It's the same. They cannot comprehend it because they have water here. But it is not fantasy, it is a fact, and this is advanced technology. So probably 1,000 years from now they will talk about this when there is no water in this planet. So what to talk of flying? There is technology nowadays when there are flights in air, fueling jets in the mid-air, you know, when there are jumbo jets flying, there's another jumbo jet trying to fuel this plane. It's all fantasy, not fantasy for them, it's science. But when there is a flight, millions of planes carrying water, it becomes fantasy. How is that? That's dogmatism, isn't it? So here is advanced science that Bhagavatam preaches. So this is a call for the scientists to come and study Bhagavatam very interestingly. And they have planes that can fly from ships. They have aircraft carriers, etc. So this is all, 300 years ago, this might have been very, you know, you could say these are all nice stories. And when we were young, we used to read these Chandamama stories. Chandamama used to come, so we used to read all of that. So they have been, because they cannot comprehend with their current senses, they think it's fantasy. But it's not fantasy, it's a reality. And therefore Prabhupada highlights this point. And such scientists did not exist, they are not existing these days. They were always existing. They are not recent incarnation, they always existed. And Bhagavatam also speaks of them. For example, we just spoke about a very powerful king in the same lineage, King Vena. Vena also was one type of scientist. So when he became a king, he was a self-proclaimed king. When he became a king, he asked the brahmanas to first stop all these yagyas. He said, hey, you guys are wasting time. You are wasting ghee. You are wasting ghee and creating pollution. Now you come to my city and work. When you work, we will give you salary. Then you can live on salary. So this is another, you know, you can see this today's day and age in India, what is happening. They will say the sages are wasting their time. Don't waste your time sitting and chanting. Do some work. Earn some money. So there is constant pursuit to make everyone Shudras. Because if he is a Shudra, he wants to see everybody a Shudra. So King Vena was such a person. So in other ways, he was also a scientist. So he says, don't believe in God. I am your God. And he will quote Shastras also. Shastra say king is a representative of God, you know. So I am your God. So worship me now. So listen to what I say. So he was one type of a scientist. Then we have Ravana. Ravana thought, why should I need God? I am so powerful. So I can access what I want with my own pursuit. So he tried to build a staircase to heaven. And people in his kingdom were very happy. You know, probably people were trying to apply for visa and citizenship to Sri Lanka then. You know, it's a nice city. We'll go there. Golden city. Just as people were applying for Victoria once upon a time because it was city of gold. They say Victoria was one of the richest places in the whole world at one point in time. Because our parliament here in Victoria is made of gold. Have you noticed that? There's gold inside the parliament. So a lot of gold they use because mining, gold was, there was gold rush there. So therefore, material pursuits are easy to obtain. Especially, that is why it is called as, you know, this Aroha Pankta and Avaroha Pankta. Aroha means I will go and obtain on my own might. So this is what Bhagavatam criticizes. This is what devotional service criticizes, that you may get what you want, but that is not the ultimate pursuit of life. We have Kamsa, another scientist, who tried to defy the ultimate Big Bang. And all of these scientists finally, you know, they also have to meet their end. The so-called glorious scientist, I was reading an article where a scientist was preaching that 2048, man will become deathless. It was a big article. But where is that guy? He might also be dying very soon. But they will preach and they will put these Akashavani persons. They will preach such philosophies. 2048 will be deathless. But we are seeing in the past 2 years how we are saving our lives, trying to save our lives. Bhagavatam has spoken that we have to go underground one day. So we have already gone inside the houses these days. But then there will be a day when we go underground. So these are the parallels that Prabhupada tries to bring out. That material pursuits is not wrong, but material pursuits devoid of bhakti is wrong. So we have to understand that do not try to pursue anything on your own might, because material energy is very strong. Daihi esha guna mai mama maya duratyaya. So therefore Bhagavatam says any pursuit has to be connected to Krishna all the time. Has to be always connected to Krishna. Only then that pursuit becomes successful. That is what is called aroha. Aroha means it is bottom up. We have to expect that knowledge to flow. So therefore Ganga is flowing from top down, so that you can receive it from the bottom. So knowledge comes from top and top to down, and then we have to obtain that knowledge by obtaining from the descending knowledge, not from the ascending ascending process. So therefore Bhagavatam speaks about all of this. This Bhagavat Tattvam is very important to understand, that devotional service, and in one sense, we can never compare devotional service with science. What science we have today, it's almost criticizing devotional service if we compare it to science. Devotional service is somewhere here. So it's science is what science we see today is incomparable, because the products of science are all product of three material modes. The devices that we see today, they are just a combination of the three modes of material nature. So therefore they will absorb us in the three modes, and they will keep us busy in such pursuits. That is why Prabhupada says, if you become busy with such pursuits, you will not have any time to spend on devotional service. So therefore conserve your energy and spend them in the right way. That's why Bhagavatam becomes very important. Why? Because it is said in the third canto, ekanta labham vachasonu pumsam sushloka mauler gunavada mahuhu srutescha vidvadbhir upakritayam kathasudayam upasampravyogam. So this Bhagavatam is composed by great scholars in the very upakritayam. It is composed in such a beautiful way. It is composed so scientifically. As we see, the ashraya, the ultimate shelter of Bhagavatam, is Krishna's lotus feet. But it takes us through all of this. And especially fifth canto is the nabhi. It is called as it is a waste of the Lord. So therefore that we've crossed the feet of the Lord, now it's a waste of the Lord. So that's a big hump we have to cross. And that is why there is a lot of phantasmagoria spoken about here, and how we increase our faith. Many times it is said, faith, we are not faith, you know, we are not faith people. You know, faith is only for the blind. But what they do not understand, there is no equivalent word of Shraddha in English. Shraddha. Shraddha means, Shra means to know, faith, dha means with knowledge. To know with knowledge is called Shraddha. It is not, there is nothing called as Andhashraddha. Shraddha means to know something with knowledge. But there is no equivalent word like that in English. The closest word they have is faith. So there is nothing called as blind faith in Sanskrit. Shraddha means to know with knowledge. So Bhagavatam, to understand Bhagavatam, we need that faith. We need the faith in Sadhu, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Only then this can reveal to us. And this is very arranged very nicely. Prabhupada writes the translation for this verse, ekanta labham. The only highest professional gain of humanity is to engage in the discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor. Sushloka mauler gunamadam ahu. of Krishna, basically. And in this case, why is it relevant? Because the river touched the lotus feet of the Lord, Lord Vamadeva, when he descended. So when I was reading, there's a very, very interesting pastime of Sri Vamadeva in the Vamana Purana, which we see, which is not very apparent in any other, either Mahabharata or any other Puranas. Now, in Vamana Purana, what happens is there is a episode that is described of how Vamadeva incarnates. The scene is basically Bali Maharaj's town. The scene is taken to Bali Maharaj's town, and it is said that Bali is preparing for a very big sacrifice. But during the preparation of the sacrifice, it is noticed that the people are a bit restless and the people are feeling some bad omens or ill omens for their activities, and this is asuras basically. And what has happened, Bali knows that he is going to be the next Indra in the next Manvantara. But what he thought, anyways, I'm going to be Indra then. Why wait? Let me take it now. Let me drive this guy out anyways. I'm very powerful now. So he would have already driven away the current Indra. And then he said, I am the Lord of the three worlds. Already, Bali Maharaj is already the Lord of the three worlds. And now he is celebrating that. But during that celebration, they noticed that the citizens of Bali's kingdom are becoming restless. And they are becoming... They can foresee some ill omens happening to their activities. Not ill, basically, but they are seeing some danger, imminent danger. So they all go and present it to Bali Maharaj. Something is not right, Maharaj. You have won the three worlds, but somehow we are sensing some danger. What is it? So Bali Maharaj then couldn't understand, but he said, okay, let me go and ask his guru's guru. His father is his guru, which is Virochana, and his father is Prahlad Maharaj. So he goes and asks his tata, his grandfather. Grandfather, can I ask you some question? My citizens are disturbed. For some reason, they are not able to participate in my celebration. So what is the problem? Can you please tell us? So Prahlad Maharaj, we know, the glorious Prahlad Maharaj is old now. So he says, okay, let me see. And so he says, let me go into my meditation and then see what is happening. So Prahlad Maharaj goes into meditation. The moment he goes in, the first picture he gets is Aditi. Now what has happened? Aditi Devi, to Aditi the Lord has said, I will come as your child. So Aditi says, how can I? You are the Jagat Karana Vastu. You are beholding the whole universe. How can I hold you in my womb? So the Lord says, don't worry. I will be in your womb and I will hold you and I will hold myself. No one holds me. I only hold everything. Whether I am in the womb or I am outside the womb. So I hold everything. So that is unique, you know. You are carrying a basket, but the person in the basket is carrying you and himself. It's a unique. Only Krishna can do that. So no, but there is another element which does it, which is air. Air also carries, and air can be inside, air can be outside as well. So this is the Sarva Vyapaka, the omnipresence of the Lord aspect that the air carries or vayu carries. So the Lord said, Aditi, I'll come in your womb as Indra's brother. This is two lineage, Aditi and Diti, Kashyapa Muni's two wives. Aditi's son is Vamadeva, comes as Vamadeva. And Diti's son are, you know, Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad, Virochana, and so they're always aunts. Aunt's son is Vamadeva in one sense. So Aditi's son, Vamadeva, Prahlad Maharaj closes his eyes and starts meditating. He could see Aditi Devi glowing. And then he said, oh, Aditi is pregnant. And then he could see, he could go into the womb. Everything internally, he's able to see it. And then he said, oh my dear Lord, Lord Vasudeva is inside the womb of Aditi. And then he goes inside the womb and he says Vasudeva. And then he goes into Vasudeva. And inside Vasudeva, he is seeing the Virat Rupa of the Lord. What Yashoda Maya saw and what Arjuna saw. Inside that womb of he saw Vasudeva, and inside Vasudeva, he could see Bali Maharaj, he could see Virochana, he could see himself, he could see the entire creation, he could see everything. He could see everything, and he is very pleased. And he is now, Ashtasatrik Bhav has come out because he's seeing the Lord, and he's seeing the universal form of the Lord. Just the form that the Lord had shown to so many, now Prahlad Maharaj is able to see, and because of Bali's request. And then Prahlad comes back of his meditation and he is very happy. He says, the Lord is going to incarnate. That Lord which is agochara, which is not perceived by material senses. Atah Shri Krishna Nama Adi Nabhaved Grahyam Indriyaihi. That Krishna is now visible. He will become visible. He is coming as the son of Aditi. He has come to destroy you, Bali. He says, you are against the shock. That is why you are disturbed. So I have seen it. He is coming. My Lord is coming. So Bali, for a moment, Bali is a devotee. By Swabhava, he is a devotee. He is a Sattvika Jiva. He is a pious person. But because of his material activities and mode of passion, he says, you are saying a new boy is born and this boy will be the reason. And you are saying, he is also Hari. He is Hari. He is like Hari. He is going to defeat me, the Lord of the three worlds. So he speaks that. The moment he speaks that, Prahlad Maharaj becomes angry. He says, how dare you? It's a grandson and grandfather speaking here. But Prahlad Maharaj becomes angry. Prahlad Maharaj says, how dare you talk about my Lord like that? May your opulence be destroyed. He curses him. He curses him out of sattvic anger. His anger is valid because he's talking about the Lord. So he has criticized the Lord. Bali has criticized the Lord. And then Vamandev gets angry and he curses. But what this Purana talks about also is it glorifies Bali Maharaj. It glorifies Bali Maharaj because Bali Maharaj very quickly, he doesn't get angry. He immediately comes to his senses and he begs Prahlad Maharaj's father. He says, my dear grandfather, he calls him Tata. He says, please forgive me. I said something, but generally it is the habit of elderly people to forgive children. I am your grandchild after all. Why did you curse me, grandfather? You know I am not a bad person, but by my slip of tongue I said something. Instead of chastising me and rectifying me, you cursed me. Why did you do that? Please forgive me. I take your shelter. I don't care if the Lord comes and takes my wealth and he destroys me. I don't care. But you don't abandon me. For me, you are the ultimate shelter. Now, this, when the Puranas talk about this, they glorify devotees like us. So therefore, even such powerful personalities immediately surrender to the spiritual master. And this we also see when Ganga Devi flows down, when nobody could hold her force. Who holds it? It is Lord Shiva who holds it. Why does he hold it? Because putting something on your head means what? Naturally taking an inferior position. So he is taking an inferior position to Ganga. We say he is Gangadhara, but actually Lord Shiva is taking an inferior position to Ganga to keep her on the head. Why? Because she has touched the feet of the Lord. So therefore Lord Shiva takes this position. The Ahankara Tattvabhimani Devata, that is the Lord who is the presiding deity for false ego, he surrenders to Ganga Mani. And even in the third canto we see that when he comes out of Brahma's eyebrows, he starts creating and his followers start creating destruction everywhere. And Brahmaji says, oh my God, these people are starting to destroy. I have not even started creating yet. So Shiva is creating problems. So he calls Shiva and says, you do one thing, you take your followers and start meditating. You stop your creation for now. So we need you at the end of creation, not now. So you please go and meditate. So immediately Lord Shiva accedes to it. He says, okay, whatever you say, my dear father. So Lord Shiva teaches us this, that even though he is the presiding deity of false ego, he always surrenders to the authority. He surrendered to his father, his guru, who is Lord Brahma. And he is teaching that to his followers. To say, hey, look, I am surrendering. So don't be egoistic. So in the same way, Bali Maharaj also surrenders to Prahlad Maharaj. Then Prahlad Maharaj comes back, relieves his anger and says, I do not know why I cursed you. But I did not curse you with ill intentions. Just as a mother's chastisement and mother's love is not different. Because mother's chastisement is also good for the child. It's not duplicitous. You might think sometimes, mother is chastising, she's very rude. It's not. She's also chastising for the wellness of the child. And she's loving also. So there is no difference. So in the same way, love of the Lord, there is no difference. In the same way, Prahlad Maharaj's cursing to Bali also is not different. So Prahlad Maharaj says, maybe there is a divine reason why I cursed you. Maybe the Lord wanted something from my mouth. He made me speak. So I cannot take back my curse. The only person who can save you is the Supreme Lord. So when he comes, you go and surrender to him. And then we know the pastime of the Lord. Vamandev is born, and as soon as he's born, he becomes a Vatu. Vatu means he becomes a small dwarf like a brahmana, and then as soon as he becomes a brahmana, all the sages donate, you know, they donate Yajnopivita and the kaupin and everything, and then they prepare it quickly, they dress him with kaupin, everything, chata and the umbrella and kamandula, and then he's ready to go. He says, I'm ready to go now, let me go to Bali Maharashtra. So they very quickly prepare him and he goes. And when he goes, there is a beautiful discussion that happens between Bali Maharaj and Vamandev. Bali Maharaj, he's celebrating and he sees this effulgent little dwarf brahmana approaching him. And Bali, for a minute, probably understands he is Vasudeva. Now this word Vasudeva is also very unique. Vasu means pure heart. And one who comes and resides in that heart is called Vasudeva. So that's why Vasudeva, who was Devaki's husband, Krishna can take birth through Vasudeva, through the heart. Why? Because his heart is very clean. When his heart is devoid of greed, envy, anger, lust and moha, illusion, only such heart can be a resident of the Lord. Tumhare hridaye sada govinda vishram, Narottam Das Thakur writes. So whose heart is clean, they are Vasudeva. Vasudeva becomes Vasudeva. That person who can conquer the six anarthas becomes the Vasudeva, and in that Vasudeva comes and sits that Vasudeva, so that Supreme Lord. So he could notice that is the Vasudeva, the Supreme Lord, but for some reason a brief moment of illusion covers his intelligence, and then he says, oh my dear Brahmana, what do you seek? And then, you know, Vamandev says, I just need 3 steps of land. He says, you've come to Bali Chakravarti, the Lord of the three worlds. Do you know even who I am? You're asking 3 steps. Please, I can give you more. You ask something, you know. He says, Mr., I know what I want. You give me what I want. I don't want whatever you give. You give the rest to everyone else. You know? So therefore, this transaction happens between Lord and Bali Maharaj. And there is a lot of preaching that also happens. Because it's interesting, this material world, especially land, you know, there are wars fought for this land. Alexander the Great, Mughals, so many people fighting. The earth is still there. Where have all the kings gone? They said, this is my country, this is my country. They've all gone. The earth is still there. This is no one's country. This is the Lord's country. This is the Lord's place. So therefore, the Mother Earth also laughs. These people fight so much for me, but they all go and die one day. But I remain. The earth always remains. So like that, Vamandev keeps telling him, look, I just need 3 steps. If you want to give me, you give me. Otherwise, I'm going. If you can give me, you give me. I don't want anything else. Then Lord Bali says, okay, fine. If you really want only that, I can give you. But I could have given you more. You know? Then he says, no, for doing yajna, I'm a brahmana. To do yajna, I need 3 by 3. 9 feet space. 3 steps. That's all I need. You give me that, I'm happy. I'll do my yajna and I'm happy. I'm a brahmana. I am not a king. You keep what you want. So all this happens, and then Bali Maharaj for a moment agrees, and we know the past time, Shukracharya stops him, etc. But he does it nevertheless. He pours water, and when you give dana, you take the water and then you leave the water like that. The moment the water is left, not an instant, then Vamandev expands. He expands into the three worlds and then lifts his leg and pokes the hole into the universe. It's not that, you know, Vamandev was still small and then a leg went like this, nothing like that. He expands the whole three worlds. He becomes Vyapak. Tata means to expand. And then he pokes a hole and then, Ganga flows down. The Lord, when he advents, he finishes multiple tasks. You know, ek tirse bahut, you know, you say one stone hits many birds. The Lord does like that. So he's come now to accomplish many things. One is to teach all of us, not to teach Bali a lesson. Bali is already a devotee. To teach all of us the ultimate of bhakti. What is the ultimate stage of bhakti? Atma Nivedam. To teach that, Bali Maharaj. He uses Bali Maharaj to glorify. It's actually glorification of Bali Maharaj. And then Gangaji is brought to this planet. And then saving Indra also, because Indra's position had been usurped by Bali Maharaj. So he accomplishes many tasks like this. And Indra also had this desire that the Lord wants, he wants the Lord to be his brother. So he comes as his brother, Vamandev, Upendra. So therefore, when he conquers the three worlds, he becomes called as Trivikram. So in that sense. So all these accomplishments and all this history is told by Srimad Bhagavatam for us by the descent of Ganga. And therefore, the descent of Ganga is very important for us. And the Lord's ascent also, the Lord's descent, sorry, the Lord's descent into this world is very glorious for us to understand. So I'll summarize. In this purport, Prabhupada talks about the glorious Ganga which flows down. It goes to Dhruva Loka and then the Saptarishi. In science we also talked about Saptarishi Mandal, the stars, the seven stars or the seven planetary system, the seven sages, Marichi, Atri, and then it comes down to Brahma, Brahma's Loka and the Sumeru Parvata, and then how it flows in the Bharata Varsha. It is said that the entire water bodies that we see here, they are all connected to Ganga in one sense. And then Prabhupada also takes the opportunity to talk about the so-called advanced scientists who try to do material pursuits devoid of Krishna. But Prabhupada makes a point, because any pursuit in this material world should always have the aspect of devotion in this. In the, without devotion, any material pursuit is like atheistic and it can have a disastrous end, as we see in the Shastras for all the other kings which we have seen. And Vamandev's pastime also is very excellent, of how he accomplishes and teaches us a lesson of the glorious Bali who gives himself to the Lord, devoid of any false ego or any ahankar. So many points come upon in this purport. So I'll stop here. If there are any questions or comments, we can discuss. Are there any corrections? Yes, Madhuri. We'll just wait for the mic. Prabhu, you can give this mic. Actually, in one sense, Shastras always speak contradictory things, and both are true. That happens only in the case of Shastras. Even if we think Ganga was proud and then there was a lesson that was being taught to us, of course Ganga and Lord Shiva are very exalted personalities. But this is all a lesson for us that Lord Shiva can control her force to stop her, because Lord Shiva is also a very powerful personality. But at the same time, if someone wants to teach someone a lesson, you don't have to put them on the head. You know what I mean? So you can, if a guru has to teach a disciple a lesson, he will not keep him on his head. Yet Lord Shiva keeps Ganga on her head. Why he has to use the jata to hold her? He can hold her just by his will. By his will or by his thumb. He doesn't have to do that. So he held it because Ganga has touched the lotus feet of the Lord. Because Ganga is a devotee. So at the same time, okay, I have to somehow remove the pride, but I have to be careful in that sense how I deal with this devotee. So a lot of lessons come out of these Shastras. So he does it in a very sweet way, by putting her on the head, rather than teaching her in another harsh way. And at the same time, it is the scriptures trying to teach us a lesson. They are still exalted, whether Ganga becomes proud or through Ganga becoming proud, the scriptures teach us this lesson. And Lord Shiva holding her in the Jathara, he is teaching us a lesson that he can teach people a lesson. And because he is also the Mano Abhimani. Therefore, if we have pride, Lord Shiva takes us away from Krishna. So therefore, we have to be very careful. Because he is the presiding deity of false ego. So we have to be very careful not to offend Lord Shiva also. So therefore, and Ganga still stays in the Jathara. Ganga agrees to stay and then she flows out of Lord Shiva. And there are many other understandings. Lord Shiva also feels, I'm always associating with such people. Let me always keep Ganga on my head so that I can always pass. That is why Lord Shiva is called as Abhishekha Priya. The Lord is called as Alankara Priya. Shiva is called as Abhishekha Priya. So therefore he puts Ganga so that he can bathe all the time. Because he says, I'm a Smashanavasi, let me bathe all the time. So there are many beautiful aspects that come upon in scriptures like that. But they're all teaching us a lesson through these personalities. That's what I feel, Mataji. Does it make sense?
Beautiful point
that
you said to Lord Shiva, because surely his exalted position to be accepted devotee is always humble.
Yes.
Even when Arjun said he is the controller for Shiva, but because he sees the quality of Ganga as a devotee of the Lord, washing the lotus feet of the devotees and seeing the good things of others,
yes,
his attitude to service and submissive humbleness.
Yes.
Because he sees that the positive aspect.
Yeah.
Beautiful aspect.
Yeah, that's a service with love. So that's what he's done. He put Ganga on her head.
Just another quick one is whether Ganga is Charanamrita because she was Karnamrita by Vishnu's feet, or it's,
because Vamandev's feet. Because here, the first verse in this chapter, Vamandev's feet has that vermilion and then Ganga touches the feet and then descends. So it's Vamandev's feet that she washes.
But at the same time, it's the strength of the Lord.
Yeah. She's connected to the Lord in this very, very deeply. And many other places in Goloka, we have this, that they are liquefied forms. Ganga and Yamuna are very pure in that sense. Yes, Rosie. I'll repeat your question. No, you have no question.
Regarding you said about Madhvacharya, is that he recited that sloka and he said that in previous birth was there or something?
No. He could remember his past. He said, I remember Bhagavatam from my last life.
So such an exalted person to reborn again, and what we say that we go back to God and go back to others, we say, what did it do? Where do we stand?
Yeah, his rebirth was different. Great personalities and acharyas take birth only to preach and take us back home back to Godhead. They are not dictated by karmic baggages like us. They come to preach. They come to preach and they come because the Lord has ordained them to come. As a seva, they come and they go. Same as Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. They're all exalted personalities. To keep the Lord's feet on one's head, I don't know how fortunate one must be. When we go to, I don't know, if we go to temples, you have this kirita, you know, the crown kept at the lotus feet of the Lord. Now, on the crown, there is two Vishnupad. And when you go, they keep the crown on your head. You see that? And that is nothing but Bali Maharaj is experiencing. To keep the lotus feet on one's head, I don't know how many eons of fortune one must have. So that was the fortune that Bali Maharaj had. For what? For annexing the three worlds, which Indra couldn't have. Indra got back his kingdom. But what did Bali get? Bali got the lotus feet of the Lord. So that is why that is the highermost. Atmanivedam is the pinnacle of devotion, and that is what Bali Maharaj stands for. That he gave himself away to the Lord. And what happened later, we know. The Lord gave himself to him. And so like that. So in that sense, the acharyas descend to teach us slowly. And we know Madhvacharya was Bhima, Hanuman, he is this personal eternal servitor of the Lord. So they come, and Ramanujacharya was Lakshmana himself, Shesha. So they come and they teach and they preach to us. Yeah, so they don't come based on karma. Does it make sense to you?
ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, शिला प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय, गौर विमानंदे हरि की बोल।